Well, everybody likes getting the permanent fund dividend, and we want to keep getting it. The policy is to invest it for yield. Is that the best thing to do with $40 billion? I'm Steve Heimel. Our number 1-800-478-8255, that's 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. Today, Mike Burns, Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund, returns to our show. Last time he was here, he made news. Let's see what happens this time on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Mike Burns, the Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, joins us by telephone from his office in the Gold Belt Building in Juneau. Mike, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Steve, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm glad to have you on the show. You may or may not recall when we first had you on, and it probably was, you know, not too long into your tenure there, maybe a year. And you've been there, what, like you're going into your eighth year now?
Yeah, actually, this is the first day of my eighth year. I started August 1st in 2004.
Yeah, but when we had you on, I was nonplussed when I said, well, you know, do you think that you need to apply some social criteria to your investments? And you said, absolutely, that's only appropriate. And that was no permanent fund director had ever said anything like that before. But you followed through on that big time, haven't you?
Well, we at one issue we did some divestiture or looked at divesting in the area of the Sudan and the Darfur region, but other than that, we really try to look exclusively at the economic issues involved. There's just too many issues to try to follow on divestiture, and it's with that one exception that's really been our policy, you know, throughout the years.
And as I understand it, when it comes to stock investments, the fund is essentially mostly goes with an index fund, right?
It depends on the particular type of stock. Now, we feel that the large cap stocks, think IBM or Caterpillar or General Electric, things of those names, there's really not much advantage that one active manager is going to have over another. There's so much information out there. They all have access to it. So trying to outsmart somebody in those types of stocks is just not a very rewarding task. Now, if you get into small cap, some of the emerging market stocks, some of the international stocks, there is value to be added by active management. So we try to really look at how efficient the market is for certain types. And the more efficient the market is, then the more we're drawn towards indexes. The less efficient, less followed stocks, we do use active management. So it's a combination of both.
And where do we stand now in terms of the, you know, when you get that famous pie chart? And actually, you've got a pair of pie charts now, but let's take the pie chart of showing where the fund's investments are. Just generally speaking, stocks, bonds, real estate, then different kinds of, for instance, stocks and bonds.
Well, Steve, let me tell you, we're looking at our assets a bit differently today than we did. I guess we've been doing this about 3 years now. And rather than look at them just in the you know, as silos, I guess is as good a way to say it, that what do we have in stocks, what do we have in bonds, what do we have in real estate, we've really tried to look at our assets as to why we own them and what economic conditions how will they perform? And let me just go through a couple. We actually have five what we call asset allocation buckets. One is just pure cash or very short-term treasuries and things of that nature. That's about 2% of our allocation. And, you know, up until we went to this type of asset allocation, we never had a cash allocation. And we used the month of July as a rebalancing time to as part of our funding for the dividend. And that worked over the life of the fund pretty well. The last 3, 4, 5 years, the markets have become so volatile that trying to raise almost $1 billion in any 30-day period could either be the smartest thing you ever did or the dumbest.
And yeah.
Our job is really not to try to outsmart the market. So we try to build the cash allocation over the year, taking some money off the table. And then we also have some allocations to assets that have capital calls that, you know, people are out there, they're authorized to buy things for us, but we don't know when they're going to be able to buy them. So, you know, we try to keep some cash available for what we anticipate to be capital calls. We also have an interest rate bucket, which is we put in there U.S. treasuries, U.S. agencies, and the sovereign debt of both developed and emerging market countries. And those types of assets we really own to be in position if there's an economic crisis, if there's deflation. You know, when people run to quality, we want to have money, you know, where they're running. Then the third asset.
Okay, and you got, where are you in that? Is that still at
that's
around
about
six?
About 6-7%.
Yeah.
The largest allocation we have is about 53%, and that's what we call company exposure, and that's where we have all of our equities, whether they're public or private, you know, whether they're small cap, large cap, mid cap, you know, U.S., international, global. But all of our equities are there. In addition, we also have our corporate debt. And what we've seen over the last number of years is the corporate debt seems to act very similar to the equities. And we like our managers and our portfolio strategists to be able to move where up and down the capital structure. You know, maybe there's a better return. I'll go back to IBM. Maybe there's a better return in IBM's debt than there is in its equity. But they're both going to respond to the success of IBM and the economy. So, you know, this company exposure is really our way to participate in the economic growth, you know, of the country and the world.
So do you still have those bond traders down the hall there?
Yes.
Up early and they come in and they're basically trading corporate bonds almost entirely.
Corporates and treasuries. All mm-hmm. of our core fixed income. We probably manage about $6 billion right here in Juneau. Our high-yield bonds, our international bonds, and a couple of specialty accounts are managed by external traders. But, you know, our core fixed income is managed, you know, right here.
Okay. So we were running through. We've gone cash. We've gone interest rates. We've gone company exposure. What else you got?
We got a bucket that we call real assets. And that's where we have real estate. We have infrastructure and TIPS, which are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities.
What? Wait a minute.
Yep.
I never heard of that before. I'm not a big investment person, but holy mackerel, what that?
What TIPS are U.S. government securities, but their value changes are protected against inflation. If inflation goes up, the value of the bonds go up. If it doesn't, you earn a pretty low interest rate. But they're strictly to protect against inflation and increases in inflation. And that's a lot of why you own real estate, and infrastructure has some of those. And infrastructure could be a toll road, it could be an airport, it could be a water treatment plant, it could be electrical transmission lines. We have a bit of all of those. But those, you can go back, generally they're regulated assets, and you can go back to a regulatory commission If there's an increase in costs and increase your tariff or your toll or whatever. But those assets we own to protect ourselves against inflation. And so that's, again, that's real estate, infrastructure, and TIPS.
Right, and yeah. That, so, and I see what you mean, because that is like what a person might do, you know, think of their own real estate, home investment and so forth. Yeah.
Exactly. And then the fifth bucket is what we call, for lack of a better term, special opportunities. And this is, we try to take advantage of misallocations or opportunities in the market as they, you know, as it presents itself. Now, right now, we have absolute return in there. We have a mezzanine debt fund. We have a distressed debt fund. We have commercial mortgage-backed securities. And we have emerging market debt and actually equity. We have two managers, and this is kind of a new thing we're trying, in the emerging markets, which are really dominated by the BRIC countries, which is Brazil, Russia, India, and China. But there are other emerging markets. They're the largest. We allow the managers to invest in the equity securities of the emerging markets, in the debt securities of emerging markets, and also the currency. And they can move, you know, between those three types of assets in the emerging markets basically at will. And then we also have, in the special opportunities, we have five what we call external CIOs. And we've been in this about 2 years now. We put out an RFP, and I think we had 35 respondents for it and went through the search process from there and got down to five. And these five can invest in anything that is legal for the permanent fund to be invested in. So they really basically run their own mini permanent fund. And we tried to get five with very different strategies. And, you know, we use them as basically kind of a model, kind of to look at, to keep track of, for education. They've been very helpful to us. Four of them have done exceptionally well. One is a very much a contrarian, has had a very difficult time. But that's kind of how we looked at this. If all five were doing exactly the same types of returns, we didn't get the diversity that we wanted. But like I said, they can invest in anything that's legal for the permanent fund, with the exception they cannot tie up our money more than 2 years, and they can't buy real estate. But all the other assets are available to them.
And what's that? Does that still run around your 20-21%?
Yes, that's about 21%. But it's interesting, because if you think just of the name, Special Opportunities, you don't, that's a limit as more than a target, because you don't want to force yourself into special opportunities. They may not exist. You know, so the discipline is not to try to create what you hope will be a special opportunity. If it's there, you want to take advantage of it. Any money that we don't have deployed in special opportunities goes back into company exposure.
Wow. So what do you think, you know, looking forward, Mike Burns, you know, this is a really interesting way of dividing up the investments. So in other words, you're not, it used to be, it was like, okay, these are domestic stocks. This is an index fund. This is a small cap. This is, these are foreign stocks and on like that. And they're still in there. But you basically said, I'm also going to split up the pie into these more risk management types of categories. And that appears to be working out, right?
Yes, certainly in the short run, and that doesn't make a trend, but we just completed our fiscal year June 30th, and the entire fund had a 20.6% return, which is the third highest in the fund's history, the highest since 1986, first time over 20% since 86. So, you know, we certainly don't credit that to our new asset allocation or how we're looking at them. I mean, the markets have been very strong. Our stock portfolio was up over 30%. Bonds were up about 5%. Real estate was up 17%. Absolute return was 8%. Our real return mandates, 17%. So, you know, everything was working. I mean, with a strong wind at your back like the market provided this year, it was very attractive for us. And 20.6 this year, almost 12 last year. We're back, you know, we've made up a lot of lost ground that we had during the 08 and 09, you know, debacle. And the fund ended the fiscal year for the first time ever over $40 billion.
Wow. Now, before our listeners start getting out their calculators and everything, the first thing they need to know is that the dividend is calculated on a five-year rolling average. The
yeah.
second thing they need to know is that that's done by the Revenue Department and not the Permanent Fund Division. But
right.
nonetheless, having said all that, this has to be pretty good news for dividends. I mean, this is, I know, that 20% rate of return is nothing short of astounding.
We're very pleased with it. There's no question about it. You have to remember, not only is the formula based on the five-year trailing average, but it's the trailing average of realized returns. And this 20.6, you know, is total return, both realized and unrealized. That's how we manage the fund.
Right, and this is in terms of what it's worth. Not if it were all liquidated, it ain't going to be liquidated. So you don't realize it till you realize it.
Right.
Yeah.
The dividend last year, and you know, like you said, the Department of Revenue is responsible for the applications and distribution and all. But we sent them last year $858 million for the dividend. And
yeah.
we just yesterday or maybe Friday sent over for this year $801 million. So it'll be down 6 or 7%. Again, that's the formula, and we have those two very difficult years still in the formula. But we're certainly on the right track now.
All right. Well, we're speaking with Mike Burns. He's Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, and we're open for your calls at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. We basically just did a run-through of the numbers, and the numbers indicate that the permanent fund dividend is going to be down. Once again, this year, the worth of the fund has gone up and passed $40 billion for the first time. And we've gone through some of the categories of investment. And now I want to turn to something that people probably will want to talk about, Mike, and that is whether there should be investment in, you know, not just in Alaska, but in things that Alaskans want or value for their future. And I know the policy is totally to invest for yield. But the fact of the matter is that there was a point where the legislature asked the permanent fund to look into investing in natural gas pipeline. And that was done. And then it just sort of died.
Well, the change, if you think back, one of the proposals that was on the table a number of years ago was that the state would own 20% of the pipeline and the producers would own the other 80%. What was proposed to us, and I say proposed, it was really just in the talking stages, but of the state's 20%, the permanent fund might own half of that or 10%. You know, when we were presented with that idea, we went out and hired some people that help educate us on what we would need to look at, how we could make a good decision on whether we would or would not want to be involved in a pipeline. You know, what were the metrics, how we could look at that and you know, make our own judgment. And then there was a change in administration. The new administration didn't have any interest in that. But what's interesting is the education that we got us very interested in the infrastructure asset class. And I mentioned a little while ago about infrastructure. That's really what drew us to that. And again, infrastructure, if you think of it, they're assets that are traditionally either owned or regulated by government. And it's actually been a good asset class for us. We like it. It has some protection against inflation. It has some of the attributes of real estate and has some of the attributes of private equity. Just, I don't know if Alaskans listening, if you have flown to Vancouver, British Columbia recently, we're in a partnership that owns the airport in Vancouver. We're in a partnership that was a successful bidder to buy the Pennsylvania Turnpike. The Pennsylvania legislature ultimately decided they didn't want to sell that. But we've got water and sewage treatment plants in England, propane distribution system in India, a toll road in Spain. Very interesting assets.
Well, they are very interesting. And, of course, it immediately brings up the question, hey, wait a minute, they're not in Alaska, though. And I think you're going to tell me that this is an investment equation, that there's nothing that precludes an investment in Alaska, but it's an investment equation.
Yeah, you're precisely right. There's nothing that precludes investment in Alaska. The problem would be, you know, when I say we're in these partnerships, we might own, 8% of, let's just say, the toll road in Spain. Owning a controlling interest in something is an entirely different matter. And I think we'd want pretty good direction from the legislature and the governor's office if they wanted us to be involved in something like that. That being said, if they did direct us that way, I think it would be still the board's decision as to whether it was a prudent investment or not. But it's difficult, like especially if you think of real estate. A lot of people say, well, why don't you buy more real estate in Alaska? We're such a large buyer, we could get the market out of balance awfully quickly, create artificial demand. We own, very large properties, and they generally, we're not looking at things much less in the real estate, much less than $100 million. I mean, just how much time can you put in on a smaller real estate project, and it's not going to move the needle. I mean, it's not really going to improve your return it'd just be worth your time. So, with footprints that big, you could, like I said, really disrupt the market, the real estate market.
Well, yes, and I think we have to say, if you look at your last report, the one that was mailed out, other funds kind of took a beating on real estate, whereas, permanent fund didn't do near so bad.
Well, we're pretty cautious. We don't use much leverage. We only use leverage if we have a partner and we need to accommodate them. Some of them, we have two very large shopping centers. We're partners with a public company that needs to utilize debt because that's what Wall Street thinks they are and need to do. And so that works for us. I mean, what's kind of interesting now, if you read about some of the debt that's people put on during the crisis, it's not very attractive debt. I mean, there were very few lenders, and anybody that was borrowing on pretty harsh terms. That has created really a drag on the values of some properties. And that's an opportunity for us because we can afford to forego cash flow for maybe 2 or 3 years on a property, until you can reset the debt at more attractive terms. Because we have plenty of liquidity, we're a long-term investor. So we're seeing that as an advantage for us in the real estate market right now, and we're trying to, take advantage of that.
Do you ever get sick of hearing about Norway's, they're calling it their pension fund now?
No, actually, we have a very good relationship with the people in Norway. I mean, they're huge. It's a very, very large account.
Yeah, $525 billion last time I checked.
Martin Skanke, who just stepped down as head of it, is a good friend. We are there's an international working group of sovereign wealth funds that was put together by the International Monetary Fund probably 5 or 6 years ago now, and all the big sovereign wealth funds, or most of them around the world, get together once or twice a year and kind of compare notes, and the
Well, the propellers are going around on the propeller heads. The tinfoil hats are coming out. The black helicopters are being sighted over people's shoulders, even as you speak, Mike. You're saying all these financial bigwigs get together somewhere?
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting group, and the two delegates to this group from the United States are the U.S. Treasury and the Alaska Permanent Fund. And we met in the spring in Beijing, and in Santiago we adopted what are called the Santiago Principles, which were really heavily modeled on some of the practices that we actually have done for years here in Alaska. They were around transparency, trying to make these sovereign wealth funds less black op helicopters, as you put it, make them more transparent. And we and Norway actually were ranked by a study early on as the most transparent in the world. And so kind of the practices that we have done have been adopted in part by a lot of these funds. They're much more transparent than they were 4 or 5 years ago. And I think people wanted to be assured that the investments that they were making were for economic reasons, not for political or strategic reasons.
Yeah. So in Norway, they call it a pension fund. So clearly, it has a purpose. Clearly, they have more people than Alaska. What would you say is the distinctive difference between their fund and ours?
Well, there's a couple, and one is they do not make any distributions from the fund except to support their pension at this point.
That's a big one.
There's no dividend or anything like that, and it's set by law. I was at a conference, it's been several years ago, with about Alaska, and the permanent fund was part of it, and our tourism industry was also part of the panel. And someone from Norwegian Cruise Lines was on the panel and said, it was comparing their fund to ours and said that there's a date, and I want to say it's 2018 or 17, something like that, before they can even think about making distributions. And he was excited because that kind of matched up with his retirement. So, but, like you said, they're size-wise, they're just, we go to these meetings, around the United States and with the exception of, the two big plans in California and, there's some other big ones around New York Common and things, but we're usually one of the larger players. But when you get around these international funds, we're no longer the big dog. We're more of a chihuahua.
Well, we rank in the top 20 or so still.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. But it's that's kind of like in Anchorage when there used to be the Anchorage Telephone Utility. It was like the 14th largest or something in the United States.
Oh,
right. It was a long way from Ameritech.
Okay.
And Bell South.
All right, Mike Burns, you ready for some questions?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Bob. Joins the program from North Pole. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Mike Burns, Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Oh, Steve, thank you so much for your show. This is a great program. And, Mike, I appreciate you being out here in the public so we can get a chance to maybe tag up with you and check in. I've got two questions. One, is there a way that maybe I can hang on to that permanent fund just a little longer and just to look at it, maybe even get a chance to kiss it? But what it is that maybe you can get your fund to maybe look into a little less expensive fuel. What may work is methanol and alcohol. Two of these could easily be developed, and it wouldn't be that expensive. And with your corporation, company, whatever, it would be very easy to affect it so that I can get a chance to maybe even dance with that permanent fund for a little bit. But, and then, again, another thing is this, there's the good development area where the food crops could be made available here in Alaska. It's a vast area. It's very rich. You don't have to use fertilizer in it. And it would lower the cost of some of the food stocks here in Alaska, and it could be exported for sure. Could you maybe give me a reasoning on some of these areas, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you very much.
All right, Bob and Mike Burns, before I'll let you chew on that one while we take our little break here at the half-hour point, okay?
Very good.
All right, go ahead. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
Alaska Business Monthly, providing a source for statewide in-depth business news on Twitter at AK Business Month or Facebook. Did you know Kodiak Island already produces about 90% of its electricity from clean, local, and sustainable hydro and wind power? Renewable energy, it's working for Alaskans. Learn more at realaska.org. This message sponsored by the Renewable Energy Alaska Project.
Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. The subject, the Alaska Permanent Fund. Our guest, Mike Burns, Executive Director. The Permanent Fund is at $40 billion and growing. It had a 20% rate of return over the last fiscal year, and they're pretty proud of that. But the question is that $40 billion in the right place? Right now it's balanced. It's balanced for risk as well as return. And, you know, there's always, I'm sure, Mike, you must hear things like our last caller over and over again. It's like, oh, well, what about, couldn't it chip a little off to help the fuel costs? Couldn't you, wouldn't it be great to, and this or that thing that Alaska really needs?
Well, Bob's question, you know, is one that comes up quite often, and you've rephrased it very well, Steve. And let me just go back a little bit into the history. When the fund was first created and being created, there was at least, I would think, a several-year debate around the state about whether the fund, as it got to a size or as it grew, should be like a development bank or whether it really should be a pure investment savings vehicle. And at the end of those times, I guess the state and the people of the state came down very clearly on the side of this should be, you know, an investment vehicle, not a development bank. Now, not to leave development and innovation and things aside, one of the reasons I think they were comfortable in saying this should be an investment vehicle was, you know, they created things like ADA, the Alaska Industrial Development Authority, which, funds projects like Bob brought up, whether it's fuel or food, kind of the same time that we were created, the province of Alberta created their Heritage Fund, and they went a different direction. They really tried to become a development bank for the province, and as we went the other direction is investment vehicle. And they actually, in the late 90s, really abandoned their development focus. They really came to the conclusion that government can't really create an economy. It can create an environment where an economy can thrive, but it can't really do it itself. And so they've backed away, and they're much more similar to us today. Their experiment in trying to build Alberta with their fund just didn't work out very well. And there's one exception. They did fund their university's research, and they do have a fairly thriving biotech industry, but it certainly has not returned a fraction of the money that I think that they put into all kinds of different vehicles. So I think Alaska created different vehicles for the types of things that Bob talked about. Now, we do invest, we try to be innovative in our private equity field. We have an allocation to venture capital, and we have people that look all over the country, basically all over the world, for opportunities for whether it's, and a lot of it's in fuel savings or alternate energies and things of that nature. So we're looking at that, but you know, it's where that development is taking place.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that we've had Alaska Growth Capital in here before, and they're kind of interesting because they're big venture capital
right.
firm. They're owned by a Native corporation, and David Hoffman was just very eloquent in explaining how they did it. He said, well, look, it's a venture capital. So what that means is that we're going to expect quite a lot of payback. I mean, when we put money into something, they're going to have to pay us back with a whole lot of interest, A. B, he said, so that means that equates to a lot of risk on our part. And the smart thing that we've done is we've figured out a way to lessen that risk by having more training for the people that we invest in. And this worked out very well for Alaska Growth Capital. And I think it's kind of similar for you guys in a way. You have a certain part of your allocation that will go to venture capital, and it doesn't exclude Alaska, but it's up to others to come up with the ideas and the business plans and all that. You guys are not going to do that, nor are you going to do what Alaska Growth does, which is like train the people that you invest in.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've got 31 people here, and so, you know, training, you know, is just not something we could be doing for externally. You know, and again, it's also a function of how much money you have to put out in projects. I mean, we have people, like I said, looking for these private equity venture capital deals, and you're going to lose money on some of them. You know, I mean, if you get one out of three, or, you know, maybe one out of four somewhere in there, that hits, they hit very big, but they're like drilling oil wells. There are dry ones, but that's the business. Now, we don't have a lot of money committed. We have, I think, 4 or 5% allocated to private equity, and we'd like to have that much in it. We don't even have that much in it, so it's hard to put out. But I mean,
Mike, what I'm hearing from you is that you guys are a pretty tough sell when it comes to venture capital.
Well, we would like to have more. The venture capital market has been down dramatically with the tough economic times, and it was nothing like what was going on back in the .com era when everything was throwing at that. But it's a business of very big numbers. I mean, this 20% plus return that we had for the year, that's like about $18.6 million a day we made.
Yeah.
That's 365 days a year. And if you start running that out by the hour or the minute or the second, it's pretty extraordinary what this experiment that Alaska, you know, created a number of years ago, how successful it has become and how important it is to the future of the state.
It's, yeah, it is. Astounding is nothing short of astounding, really, when you start taking it down to how much per minute and so forth.
Yeah.
Elston joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Elston, with Mike Burns.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, and Mike, thank you. This is a really, really interesting program. Mike, I know this is going to be kind of a tough question to answer, but I would really, really like to get some insight in how you handle the politics internally in your organization. I mean, look, it's evident to me that Alaskan politicians are not that subtle and not that sophisticated when it comes to their understanding of these matters. And take, for example, a project like the Kinnick Arm Toll Authority that is looking around for investment, or the in-state gas pipeline. You have strong constituents with strong political support in the legislature. I know you guys are getting the arm, you know, to try to get you guys to put money into projects like this. How do you internally manage the politics? Is there somebody there who does this, or do you just refer to your investment committees and then give them the bad news, or do you, how do you do it?
You know, it's your premise, your thought is very logical, that we would be getting the arm, as you put it, and I honestly, it doesn't happen very often. I think, and we don't get a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking on what we ought to be doing, even aside from, you know, pet projects. It's kind of a lose-lose operation, I think, for politicians. If they're seen to be too involved, they're accused of micromanaging, and if they're seen to be involved and something doesn't work, the numbers are really pretty devastating. I mean, if you get into the wrong thing, and we've done it for political reasons, the equation just is stacked against them. You know, and the state has a lot of other reserves right now too, so that takes pressure off. I mean, you got constitutional budget reserve that's very well funded right now. So, you know, the pressure isn't there, you know, like you might think. Now we get, we get plenty of suggestions from people. Why don't you invest here? Do this, do that. When we're making money, what was to me absolutely astounding, and I think it's a real, it was a surprise, and I think it's a tribute to the people of the state. When the markets were very difficult, and I mean this absolutely literally, we did not get, or I did not get, one letter, one email saying, you know, how can you be losing money? How can you be such an idiot? Why weren't you in gold? Why weren't you in treasuries? You know, literally not one Monday morning quarterback. And, you know, our long-term strategies have carried us through. We're back, you know, we're back to an all-time high. But it was a very difficult time. I mean, I mentioned a few minutes ago, last fiscal year, we made $18.6 million a day. I didn't do that calculation in 2009 and 2008. You know, the maturity of the people of the state and how they see this fund is remarkable, I think.
That's great to hear. Thank you very much.
Surely.
All right, Elston, thanks. Yeah, I guess I would take them and basically say, we have this woman, Miss Waite, Helen Waite over here, who's going to take care of your offers. So just take them to Helen Waite.
They generally end up on my desk, actually.
I'll bet they do.
You know, Steve, on the political side, you know, one of the challenges we have is we are one of the few, if only, real profit centers the state has. And, you know, if our budget is increased, it's our money. I mean, it comes out of the fund. If they decide to authorize us to hire two more people, that doesn't mean two more teachers have to, you know, get the axe someplace. I mean, no general fund money goes into the permanent fund, you know, for its operations at all. It comes out of, you know, that 20.6% is after all of our costs.
Yeah.
So we fund ourselves, but it's still difficult, you know, getting your budget approved by the legislature because it's a challenge for them. If they authorize people for us, why not more troopers? But, you know, our cost benefits entirely different than a trooper or a teacher or anything. No less important, you know, or more important for that matter. But it's a different source of money, and it doesn't squeeze anybody else out.
I remember when I did a series on the permanent fund, and I went down there to visit the building early in the morning in the Gold Belt building there, and I watched $40 million in the move in the period of like 30 seconds. I mean, it was just, this is the difference in the price in 30 seconds in this bond. I couldn't believe it that I was seeing this happen in front of my eyes. Another thing that I saw there, Byron Mallott was running it at that point. And it's the first time I ever saw a computer server. And, of course, I can't even imagine what you guys have now, but Byron pointed that out very quickly. He said, look, you know, we get the best computers we can get because if it saves us a tenth of a second, it's going to save us money. And you must still have it. You must have some pretty fancy computing power in that building by now, Mike Burns.
We hope it's as sophisticated as out there. Even more important to us than the speed actually is in today's environment is the security. I mean, our system is completely separate from the state, and multiple levels of security. And we're probed continuously. And it's not kids, you know, coming home from middle school and sitting down with their laptop trying to mischief. I mean, we have organized attacks from overseas. Sometimes we have to have the FBI involved.
Wow.
I mean, it's a very attractive target for people. And not just us, but all financial institutions. But security, probably, you know, when you were talking then, the tenth of a second was the key thing, the speed. And now we still obviously want to real-time everything, but it's the security that's the most important thing for us today.
We're speaking with Mike Burns, Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. He's told us that they're up over $40 billion and that the permanent fund dividend is going to be down a bit this year. That allocation has already been made, and we're going through the structure of the investments and why investments are done the way they are. Let me ask you this, Mike, before we take the break: have you ever? This one from Tom in Talkeetna. You already talked about disinvestment in Darfur. But I'm wondering if you and your colleague Martin over there at the Norwegian Fund ever talked about this issue or differences you might have in what you choose to invest in for ethical reasons.
Norway is very active in, for lack of a better word, I will call social investing. I mean, it's just a part of their culture. Ours, we have taken, you know, and have been encouraged by the legislature over time to really invest, you know, where we find the best opportunities. And a lot of, you know, I mean, once you start, it's very, very difficult. I mean, whether it's tobacco, whether it's pharmaceutical companies that use animals for testing. There's an awful lot of issues that are very good issues, but when you line them all up, you have a difficult time putting, you know, investing your money, you know, across different types of asset classes and getting the type of portfolio you want. If you start saying I can't do this and I can't do that. So we've been encouraged politically to do that, and we think it's the best interest. It's the most prudent thing.
But could change. I'm hearing that it could change. I mean, it does change. At one point, there was no social investment consideration at all. At another point, the permanent fund was almost entirely in government bonds. Over time, it changes.
Well, yeah, when we were entirely in government bonds, that was the only asset that was permitted. You know, when the fund was first created, and then over time, you know, they've added equity, they've added real estate, they've added things, and now we're authorized to invest in whatever is prudent.
Yep. 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422 as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. How do you get men to wear their life jacket when the fact is that 90% of boating-related fatalities in Alaska are men? Well, truthfully, most men won't listen to messages like this, but they might listen to you. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card and make a promise to wear their life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Get a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back alive. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Mike Burns of the Alaska Permanent Fund. You got kind of a ditto here from another Mike in Juneau who says the best thing the Permanent Fund does for our economy is put $750 million into residents' pockets! Exclamation point. As long as politics stays out, it will be safe. But then he goes on to say, what about managed investments? He's saying after 20 years in the markets, I find it impossible to beat the indexes and ETFs over the long haul due to low fees and transaction costs. Any questions? Maybe the active investments may be better to go with the indexes.
Well, as we talked earlier, I mean, I can't disagree with his argument in certain asset classes. But again, if you look at some of the smaller markets, and I'm talking about small cap, mid cap, some of the international markets that don't have the liquidities that our large cap domestic does, I mean, there are advantages to be had from active management. In other areas, again, large cap domestic, and again, we said before, the Caterpillars, the Boeings, the IBMs, those types of things, I'm not going to have any special insight into what they have, or is the guy across the street. We're all getting the same information, looking at the same numbers, and to try to advantage each other on those types of stocks, pretty difficult to make money after fees, as your caller mentioned. So in some areas, it makes a ton of sense to be in passive management. In others, active. And we actually have employed in our passive strategies, if you think about generally the kinds of indexes that your caller was talking about, those are market cap weighted. In other words, you try to emulate exactly what the market is. You pick your index, let's say it's the S&P 500. You want to be exactly like that in your index fund. Well, that you know, if you're doing it on cap weighting, the more successful a stock is, the more of it the index needs to buy. So you're continually buying high as something goes up. And that's fine for growth, you know, but we also have what we call fundamentally weighted indexes, where the index is created by a combination of maybe growth in sales, growth in profits, margins. I can't think of the other things, but it's really a fundamental index. You're not looking at a company as to whether you think, you know, they have great management or not, but just how are these factors growing, or what are their ratios compared to their peers? And it's mathematically driven. It's more expensive than pure passive, but it's substantially less than active. So we use both kinds of indexes, cap weighted and then fundamental weighted.
Well, thank you so much, Mike Burns. You're so patient with us. I appreciate that. and you know, I was thinking back when you were talking about fundamentals to the way that you I could almost hear you get excited when you started talking about real estate and the opportunities that might be there because of the fundamentals and because of the fact you could afford to sit on a property for a couple of years.
Well, you know, it's if you think, I guess we think our mission starts with the sign on the front door that we walk by every morning. And that's our name. We are a permanent fund. We are multi-generational. We have the opportunity to look over the horizon, probably, if not more so, more than most institutional funds. So, and we're going to be here forever. And one of the opportunities you have when you have that kind of capital that's so long-term, we can handle lack of liquidity better than almost all institutional funds. And if you invest in assets that are less liquid, you know, over time they have a higher return because there's a liquidity premium or illiquidity premium. And so, you know, we're trying to advantage that, and that really comes up in the real estate area. So, you know, what we are advantages us against, you know, I call them our competitors. I guess maybe they're our peers.
We have a question from Joanne in Unalakleet. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Joanne.
Yeah, interesting topic, very interesting. What I wanted to say is one of the concerns that I have over the years because of the cost of living here in rural Alaska where I live is I'm wondering if the cost of living is ever factored into the formula that is used for the yearly dividend.
Wow,
and
that would be.
Can that formula be changed?
You know, I mean, that's a real good question. It doesn't really fall into Mike's ballpark, and I'm not even sure if it could be done. I think it might take a constitutional amendment to do that.
I don't know what it would take to do that, but if you study the history, one of the most interesting things I read from previous people was Elmer Rasmussen, who was the first chairman of the Permanent Fund Board of Trustees. And there was some talk when the dividend first started about creating a structure that the caller just talked about, that maybe it would be geographically or kind of a means-tested approach.
All right. Thank you, Joanne, for your call.
A means testing for the dividend. And Elmer Rasmussen said, you know, there's a real elegance to that. On that day, once a year, every Alaskan is treated exactly the same. And you know, I think there's something to that. Now, if we want to have other programs, you know, because there are certainly differences in cost of living and things around the state. There's no question about it. But, you know, I don't know. I've always been intrigued by that. And I think his word was elegance, of being treated exactly the same every Alaskan on that day.
Well, we're pretty well running out of time here, and I want to thank Scott for his call, and Harry Crawford in Anchorage. Harry, I just know you can't get your question in 30 seconds, so let's spare you that. But I will bring up one thing that was brought up by Ethan Berkowitz during the campaign, and that was the idea of investing, having some mechanism within the fund where people could shovel their dividend back in and have the fund invested in some way. He was saying maybe in the gas line, for instance. Can you picture doing that?
You know, that's come up, not necessarily the gas line, but we're asked fairly regularly, could we create a mechanism where people could leave their dividend in and, you know, kind of invest,
yeah,
you know, kind of reinvest it? You know, we're just not in the mutual fund business. That is a business of such scale that
yeah,
if you go to Fidelity or
okay,
any of these places,
well,
it just
we're just
work.
About out of time. Yeah, thanks, Mike Byrne. I think that's what Dave Rose did when he left the fund, as he kind of said, I'm going to set up my own fund that mimics a permanent fund. So it could be
right.
Done. Yeah.
Yep.
But you'd have to go to the private sector basically to do that.
Yep.
All right, Mike Burns, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate
right.
it very much.
Thank you very much to Dave Waldron and Josh Edge and Heather Orono. I am Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again is making the best decision for herself and her baby. The mother has a better chance of regaining health and energy between pregnancies, and her baby has a better chance of being born on time and at a good weight. Talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.